We've all had fierce and formidable women in our lives who have shaped who we are now. The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is dedicated to celebrating women who have shaped the education landscape more than you can possibly imagine. Who better to host this conversation than Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson, two fierce and formidable women who have been driving innovation in the field of the education world for more than 30 years. Please welcome our hosts, Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson.
Welcome to episode number 28 of Tech and Learning's Honor Roll, a podcast that celebrates fierce and formidable women in education. I'm Keisha Ray.
And I'm Frances Gibson. And we're so happy that you're joining us with a virtual smile on our podcast today, and hopefully out and about taking a great walk, listening to the amazing Susan Brooks Young. You're going to gain incredible inspiration today. So let's learn a little bit more about Susan. Prior to establishing her own consulting firm, Susan was a teacher, a site administrator, and a technology integration specialist in a career that spanned more than 23 years in both public and private education. And since 1986, she has published hundreds of articles. I gotta up my articles, Keisha, in a variety of education journals, and is the author of more than one dozen books on topics including well-being for educators and students, disinformation in media, ooh, gotta read that one, school leadership, and effective use of classroom technology. I think we know why she's on the Tech and Learning Honor Roll. You know, Susan works with educators internationally, focusing primarily on two areas: helping educators create and sustain a personal sense of well-being and practical technology-supported strategies for increasing personal productivity and effectively implementing technology-enhanced instruction. Social-emotional learning, artificial intelligence, digital citizenship, and media literacy skills are areas of particular interest for her.
And we are so lucky to have Susan join our Sheroes in Education Honor Roll in our little community of superpowered women. And I will be remiss, Frances, if I didn't point out that Susan was and continues to be instrumental in adoption, in helping get the ISTE standards adopted. She, a lot of her books incorporate those, and all of her work does great justice to the ISTE standards. So past president of ISTE is saying thank you so much, Dr. Brooks Young, for your incredible contribution to those standards and the work of ISTE. And I'm excited for you to be joining us today and be part of our podcast where we explore our M's, which you kind of have probably a sense of, but it's essentially role models, mentors, the mirror, maverick moments that have inspired you and we hope inspire others.
And Keisha, don't forget, we got to catch any edgy babble or phrasing, or I might have to insert a quick shout out as the first district that adopted the ISTE standard. So secret love, or maybe now very public love towards Dr. Susan Brooks Young. And I'm curious if you can share with us a little bit, what is the sustaining a personal sense of well-being that we mentioned in your bio?
I'd be happy to do that. But first, I need to mention, I do not have a PhD.
Well, not yet. So we have a program for you.
It's true. Claremont can help you out with that. You're a doctor in my world, sister.
It's the apprenticeship funneling up, as the chancellor in our most recent podcast said. Honorary.
Well, and I decided when I wrote the book that was being used in the course, maybe I didn't need to take the course. So,
touche.
But let's go to well-being and what I mean by that. I discovered, a little more than a decade ago, that so many of the educators I was working with were just frazzled. They were so exhausted trying to keep up with everything that was being added to their plate, with absolutely nothing being removed in the process. And the sense of almost despair in some places was so palpable that I decided I needed to figure out what was going on beyond the obvious, and if there was anything that could actually be done about it. And when I say done about it, I don't mean helping everybody turn their lives into being happy, joyous, and free all the time. That's not realistic. But instead, to find a way to empower these folks to recognize where they did have some control over what was happening in their lives, where they could make decisions that could help them feel as though they had some piece of the action that was going on, and strategies they could use to remind themselves in the midst of something like that, that they really did have some efficacy. And so when I talk about well-being and I talk about being centered, what I talk about is being, I think of it more as a realistic optimist rather than somebody who is deeply steeped in positivity or something like that, which I recognize can be toxic and really is unrealistic.
Ma'am, I bet that book is flying off the shelves right now with the stress the teachers and educators are under around the world. Not, you know, there's literally nowhere in the world that you can go that an educator is not under stress right now. Well, let's get started with our infamous M's. Can you share with us who your role models are and why?
And there's just a couple that I really want to highlight for today. One of the first people I always think of when I'm asked about a role model is a woman whose name was Betty Harrison. She was my high school Spanish teacher. And Betty was actually Native American. She was Seminole. She grew up on the res. When she went to college, she got a full ride scholarship, but she didn't realize that it included room and board. So she supported herself for an entire semester on $50. Now, granted, that was a while ago, but still, she managed to live on $50 for an entire semester. And later on, she found out that, no, in fact, they would feed her and they would give her a place to live. She just needed to ask. But her determination and her drive to educate herself and to change her life was such an inspiration to me. By the time I met her, she had finished college. She was teaching Spanish. She had had a marriage that was not successful. And so she was raising a child on her own, which also made her a first for me in that she was really the first woman I had met who was divorced and successful and taking care of herself. She went on to become a district administrator. She was eventually superintendent of the school district where I attended high school. She was available to both of my children. One of my biggest memories of her was when my son was in high school in her district and they were thinking about adopting uniforms, we bumped into her at a Starbucks. And just as casual conversation, she asked John what he thought about the uniform policy. And he said, well, let me tell you, Mrs. Harrison, I have a lot of thoughts about them and none of it's positive. And she invited him to sit down and have his coffee with her and explain why he was so vehemently opposed to this proposed plan. And I just always really admired how she continued to care about former students. She was really interested in what was happening with the people she was working with the students she was working with and their families. And I always aspired to be that kind of person myself as an educator. And I think she was a reason that I went into it. My other hero that I'll talk about less lengthily this morning is Sir Ken Robinson. I was so fortunate to get to meet him several times. And the last time I met him was at the FETC conference in Orlando. I was on crutches because I had been out walking one morning and fell and broke my ankle. And he was at a point in time with his illness where he was needing to walk using crutches when he was walking. And we had met several times previously. It was just wonderful to run into him. We talked about just kind of what was going on in life and we just kept bumping into each other throughout the entire conference. And at the airport, going back, we were both going back to LA. And so we just had this kind of continuous conversation. It was the only opportunity I ever had to make to meet his wife. She was a lovely person. But he was just so creative, and he was so thoughtful. And we would kind of pick up a conversation from where it had dropped off the previous time we had seen each other. And I just really admired him a great deal, and it was really sad to me when he finally passed on about a year ago. So those are two of my heroes.
Sir Ken Robinson is definitely a hero in many books. I know Keisha and I are incredible fans, and I think there is no accident that both of these role models and mentors were in your life. And so this bumping is definitely not by accident. It's the universe is really laying an intention for you to continue connecting. So thank you for sharing that very personal story with us. You know, these role models are icons in the way that you share about their journey and the way they've impacted you. And I'm curious, who have been some of your mentors along your journey?
I have just had such a range of people who have been there for me at different times throughout my career. There was a man, his name was Ed Bordenkircher. He was an assistant superintendent in the first public school district where I worked. And he actually scared me at first. He was kind of a gruff guy, but he taught me the importance of expressing gratitude. Every time he walked into a classroom, he would spend some time, really pay attention, talk with the kids. And then on the way out the door, he would take a minute to write a note on a Post-it and then slap the Post-it up on the door and then leave. And I discovered the first time that happened in my classroom that what he was leaving behind was a thank you note. And it wasn't just a thank you for letting me visit your classroom, or thank you, I had a nice time. It was always kind of a specific, I really appreciated the way you did this, or I enjoyed speaking with fill in the blank, a student's name, or something that was more specific than just I had a really nice time, thanks for having me. And while he had really high standards and he had high expectations for the people who worked with him, he also had no difficulty letting people know how much he appreciated what they were doing. And so that was something that I learned very early on. And he was a mentor for me while I was working in that district.
And I bet the things that you learned from him, you have carried on throughout your career, probably.
I mean, I've certainly tried.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
When did you look in the mirror and see a leader?
I was a summer school principal several summers. But one summer, we had an outdoor assembly, and I don't know, 500 kids sitting outside in the California sun. And they were really attending to what was going on. And I don't even remember anymore what it was that the assembly was about. But afterward, one of the teachers came up to me and said, "My gosh, I have never seen an administrator be able to capture and hold the attention of that many kids for that period of time during the middle of the summer. I don't know what it is, but I wish I could bottle what you've got." And at that point, I thought, oh, okay. Maybe I really can do something like this. The other thing I think that helped me recognize that I could be a leader, and this was more with families, was I was a principal at an elementary school in a really, really tough part of town. And my way of dealing with that was I went out into the neighborhood. I would knock on doors. I would talk to parents. If a kid didn't come to school, I would just go to their house or their apartment to find out why. And often I would say, okay, get up, get dressed. I'm taking you to school. When we had special events at school, I would go knock on doors and talk with people. We had campus cleanups, and I would invite families to come help us clean up. And then we would go out in the neighborhood, and we would clean up there as well. And the school was in such a rough place that I had a maintenance man from the district office assigned to my campus 2 days a week, because his job was to take care of all the damage that was being done on campus. And after about 6 months, he came into me one day and said, you know, I don't know what you're doing, but for the first time since I've worked here, and he'd been there quite a while before me, he said, I'm changing light bulbs because they burn out, not because they were shot out. And I thought, whoa, okay, that's really cool. That must mean that even though they do think I'm kind of crazy for going out there and doing all this stuff, it must be working. And that, and the fact that graffiti stopped on campus, which was also really a marker for me.
Yeah. A common thread we all have is that turnaround environment. And what you mentioned is what you bottled was compassion, being present in community, and being your authentic self. And that is so much perhaps what womanhood is also about, that nurturing, that caring, seeing them visible and knowing what to do. And I'm curious, how do you see women changing the world? You've mentioned a little bit about what you've done in your community. Mm-hmm. What might we need to know about your vision in that space?
Well, okay, straight out, I think the world would be a much better place if more women were in charge. I really do.
We do too. Particularly if it was Keisha, right?
Oh, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. What women bring to the table, and it's something that men could bring as well, but I think women bring a willingness to look at other possibilities. I think it's easy to jump to a conclusion right out of the bat, you see something happen and boom, you come to a conclusion right away about what caused that thing to happen. And once that's planted in your head, that's it, you're done. You're not going to think anymore about why did it happen. You're just going to think about, what do I do about it? And if you jump to the right conclusion, awesome. But more often than not, I think people don't. I think that people bring their own biases and prejudices into their lens that they view the world through. And more often than not, those biases and prejudices don't fit the actual situation. So while you may use those to kind of try to frame what's going on, it's important to be willing to step back and say, well, wait a minute, let me take a look at this another way. Let me see if I could figure out another way to interpret what just happened. And I think that women have less ego involved in saying, I'm going to take a step back now. I'm going to rethink what I thought was true. I'm willing to reconsider. And I also think that they don't look at it, at compassion as being a drawback. I think that sometimes people in leadership roles think that if they step back and reconsider and change their minds, that's a sign of weakness. And I think that women are more willing to say, no, that's not. Let's reconsider.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, women indeed are changing the world. In fact, leanin.org and McKinsey just published a report last week on the state of women in corporate America. And they surveyed more than 400 companies and more than 65,000 employees in professional jobs from entry level all the way up to C-suite. And the survey found that at all levels of management, women showed up as better leaders, more consistently supporting employees and championing DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Compared to men in similar roles, women managers invest more in helping employees navigate work-life challenges, ensuring workloads are manageable, and providing emotional support. So that's super encouraging news that at least it's being recognized. We still have a long way to go on, you know, ruling the world, but it leaves room for a lot of female mavericks out there who are disturbing the system. So who would you suggest we watch that is disturbing the system?
Oh, I think there's a lot of people out in the world right now who are doing that. Women, young women. I would say, look at the young women. Look at the Greta Thunbergs and look at the Malalas and look at the young women who are just fearless. They're just not taking no for an answer. I think of Greta sitting out by herself weeks on end when she first started her protest about the condition of the climate. And eventually that one person sitting there turned into a worldwide movement. And she's 16 years old when she did that. I mean, that is just totally amazing to me. I think that there are a variety of other women who are pushing the envelope in so many different ways, and they're being their authentic selves, and they're speaking what they truly believe, and they are making a difference. And I think you can look at virtually every sector to see folks who are doing that. And it just brings me hope when I see that. And when I look at the women who are making a difference. I'm doing a lot of work actually right now with ISTE and GM in artificial intelligence and the place of artificial intelligence in the classroom. And one of the things that I'm seeing that is really encouraging is the number of women who are speaking up about the role of ethics in the use of artificial intelligence. And that whole idea of just because you can doesn't mean you should kind of thing, or to be thoughtful about what it is that you're doing and don't get all caught up in the bells and whistles and do something just for the cool factor as opposed to what the outcomes might be as a result of that. And a lot of these women are almost literally faceless and nameless. They're just there behind the scenes. They're pushing for things to be done differently. They're pushing for expanded points of views about different things. And they're not getting a whole lot of individual recognition, but that I don't think that's why they're doing it. I think they're doing it because they think it's the right thing to do. And so I applaud all of those females who we never are going to read about or really hear about, but they're sort of like the hidden figures were.
And doing that right work is so important. And when we do it with compassion, it can be energy draining too, right? And so mm-hmm. one of the things that we really want to make sure we do, especially in this podcast, is how do we keep that full cup and how do we make sure that it even flows over? So I'm curious, what are some ways that you might advocate both in your own personal practice and as you work with other females to initiate some self-care routines? What might be a gem that you leave us with in that space?
Okay, as I mentioned early on, when I first got involved with this work, I really wanted to be serious about it. I really wanted to look at the research. I wanted to look at what was demonstrably effective. I did not want to just go into the positivity kind of thing. And in the research, there are actually six areas that are identified over and over and over and over again as focal points where if you do things in those areas, you will increase and then sustain your own sense of balance or well-being or whatever it is you want to call it. And the most effective of those six areas is in the expression of gratitude. If people don't do anything else, they need every single day of their lives to find at least one way to express gratitude toward themselves and also toward the people in their lives who make a difference for them. And it can be a 30-second exercise where you simply remember to thank somebody for something, regardless of who they are or what it is they've done. It can be way more involved than that if you sit down and write a note to someone, or you perhaps keep a journal and you note three things every day that you are grateful for that are in your life, and specific things, not I'm glad that there's sunshine, I'm glad that there's food, but specifically, I'm really grateful that I had an opportunity to sit down with two amazing women this morning and talk for a little bit about what's important to me. That's being specifically grateful. If people will only do that, and if they will do that for 4 weeks, at the end of the 4 weeks, they will see a difference in how they feel and in their attitude. And then you can add other areas to it. Getting focused. We are so torn so many different ways these days. Our attention spans are, you know, like that. But if we can remind ourselves to breathe, just stop for a minute and breathe. I have here left over from a workshop I did online a couple of days ago, a bubble wand. When I meet face-to-face with teachers, I bring them each a bubble wand and remind them that they can blow bubbles whenever they're feeling stressed, because you know what? You can't blow bubbles if you have to breathe to blow a bubble. So it's a way to get people just breathing and having fun. And kids love doing that as well. So breathing or doing something like coloring a mantra, a mandala, or anything that just helps somebody take a break for a second and get focused on something. It seems like a silly extravagance, but it really is important to do. We all deserve breaks. Now I'm going to sound like I'm contradicting myself, being positive. There's a difference between being giddy and being positive. And what I suggest is that educators often were such perfectionists that we're always looking at what didn't go well, what went wrong. And we need to start looking at what went right, what was good about what we did. And if you do that every day, if you can identify one thing every day that went well, it changes a person's whole perspective. I find now, I've been doing this on a daily basis now for over 7 years. I've done the work longer than that, but I really got serious about doing this every day about 7.5 years ago. And it really has changed my whole outlook on the world. Instead of first noticing all the rotten stuff going on, I now, without even thinking about it, first notice the good stuff. And people look at me kind of like, oh, okay. And it's kind of a surprise. But yeah, just doing those kinds of things. And if you do things, gratitude, getting focused, being positive, there's three more, but we could talk about those another time.
You know, that is really great advice, and advice that takes time. I mean, it takes time to be able to hold those kinds of conversations. And I think that's something I know I personally struggle with, is managing my time. I let a lot of things kind of crop up along the way that take over, and I become, you know, not the master of my calendar or my own time. And I think Frances has the same challenge. as a matter of fact. So I appreciate those words of wisdom and hope I can put them in play in the very near future. So now to finish off our time together, we like to play this little game that's called Finish the Thought. We named it Finish the Thought. But it's where we start a sentence and then you finish it. And then if you want to elaborate on why you finished it the way you did, that's feel free to do that too. So here's the first one. An event that changed my worldview.
Something that changed my worldview was a keynote at a conference that I attended back in the early 80s. The keynote speaker was talking about, strangely enough, women in roles of leadership and how often they are misread by the people around them. And we've all heard this discussion before with talking about how a man is strong, a woman is difficult. If a man gets emotional, he's showing himself. And if a woman gets emotional, she's weak. That kind of thing. And his message was that no, women being strong or women being honest or women being open is not something that they should try to fix. It's something that is really empowering or should be empowering for them. And it's not something to try to hide. It's something to really grow, build, and strengthen. And that was the first time I'd ever heard anyone, particularly a man, suggest that that this was something we ought to be aspiring to do. And I was so touched by what he said. First off, I'm sitting there crying during the talk, but I went up to him afterward to thank him, and we started talking, and the next thing I knew, we had exchanged phone numbers because it was that long ago, and we actually spoke several times after that just about how I felt and where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do. And I suppose he too, now that I think about it, could have fallen into that mentor category, because that's exactly what he did. Was he helped me walk through becoming okay with who I was and not apologizing for it and not trying to squelch it.
How impressive is it that a keynote had that kind of effect on you? And equally impressive that a man was talking about female empowerment in the 80s on stage. I love it. So I'm going to certainly keep that in mind when booking my future keynotes. And Keisha, I have one of those conversation starters too. Are you ready for this one? I became a stronger person after.
After I became a single parent. I became a single parent when I had a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. And it was clear to me that however our lives rolled from there, it was going to be up to me to make that happen. This was going to be something, this was not something I wanted, this was not something that I would have chosen, but it was where I was, and by golly, I was going to do the best job I could with what I had at my disposal. And that's it.
Those are hard decisions to make, but one that I know your kids are super grateful for.
Yeah, actually, they are.
What about this one? My life improved when I
decided to be more adventurous. There were a lot of things I really wanted to do, but again, I was a single mom. I was raising 2 kids. I was working. I wanted to travel. I wanted to live someplace other than Southern California. I wanted to meet a whole bunch of different people. I wanted to be out in the world. And that started to be able to happen for me in the mid-90s, when a lot of stuff just fell into place and turned around for me, and I was able to start traveling for fun, and I was able to start my own business in the decade following that, and it worked, and it was successful, and I am now living the life, and have been for quite some time, that I had imagined being able to live at some point.
Oh, that's so awesome. And you influenced me on living the life that I am living now. And I will be forever grateful to you for that. Was that let me tell you.
The steps of the convention center?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah, I can still envision
that's
it.
That's what I've never forgotten either.
Me either. That changed my life. That was an event that changed my life. Okay, so since I've told you an event that changed my life, tell me an event that changed your life.
Well, this is kind of a sad one, and yet it's turned out to have a good ending for me. My husband died, as you know, about 7.5 years ago. And it's wonderful to have a second really successful marriage, which is what I had. And everything had fallen into place. I was living my dream. I just thought we were going to get old together and both go to sleep one night when we were in our, I'd be in my 90s, he'd be in his hundreds, and that would be it. And life would be perfect. And that didn't happen. He fell ill. And then it died very quickly after that. And there were a lot of things around that were very unsettling and very difficult. And it was a real turning point for me. It was a point where either I was going to step up and I was going to deal with life on life's terms, or I was just going to stop brushing my teeth and never get out of my pajamas again. And I decided that I didn't want to live in my PJs with filthy teeth. So that was when I really started doing the practice that I mentioned. That's when I started doing it faithfully every single day. And that's why I say with such certainty that doing these things can make a difference, because it saved my life. It really did. And it helped me become the rest of the person I had always wanted to be and hoped to be. So while it was the saddest day of my life, saddest event of my life, it also opened up doors that would never have opened for me otherwise.
Oh, I do remember that, my friend. I'm so sorry.
Yep.
Thanks so much for this very honest, heartfelt dialogue. I've learned so much from your story. And Keisha, as usual, I'm asking you, what have you learned from this conversation?
Well, thanks so much for this heartfelt dialogue that we've had today. We've learned so much from you and from your story. And what I have learned that I kind of knew, but I just want to speak it out again, is, first of all, in my universe, you are a PhD.
Thank you.
Because you've written more in all of your books and articles than most dissertations. Trust me. So you've earned it. Your work is known around the world. You have modeled great school administration in your personal work and through all of your publications. Your workshops continue to teach people how to be phenomenal school administrators, which is one of the hardest jobs in a school district by far. And not only are you a leader, but you're an influencer. And you're an influencer and a leader with compassion and humility. And for that, I adore you and I thank you for being part of our podcast today.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I can't stop thinking about all that I've learned today. And I know our listeners are percolating around the inspiration, this spirit of mentoring that's been created and cultivated, and ways that we can lead and disturb our system in incredibly powerful ways. And so, Keisha, I have one of those coaching questions. I know you love them. So are you ready?
Yep.
All right. So here we go. And this one I think is also kind of inspired by Keisha as well. So how might you inspire others with your writing? Simple, sweet, and incredibly powerful. How might you inspire others with your writing? Let's brainstorm that list now.
Please don't forget to join our next podcast where we're going to highlight another Shiro in education and explore their M's. And until then, you can follow our hashtag TL Honor Roll, R-O-L-E, and also respond to Francis's coaching question using that hashtag on Twitter. And until then,
be fierce
and be formidable.
The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is produced by Keisha Ray, Francis Gibson, and Christine Weiser. Audio production by Mitchell Tulin and AV Nation. Tech and Learning's Honor Roll theme music is by Madison Van Gundy. Find more episodes on techlearning.com and follow us at hashtag TL Honor Roll. That's TL Honor, R-O-L-E.